Welcome to MuggleCast, your weekly ride into the Wizarding World fandom.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
And I'm Laura.
On today's episode, what's on your minds? We're reading some of our favorite owls that we've received from listeners over the past month, and then we'll go back to August 2007 to read an email from a listener that we never responded to. So it's going to be somebody's lucky day 14 years later.
Now, Andrew, since we did that Chick Peeps podcast, are we allowed to say that we've received owls? I thought we settled that.
That actually did cross my mind.
Digital owls.
Right, of course. I mean, we're not, I think everybody knows we're not actually receiving letters via owl, so I think we're okay.
Well, for the emails from 2007, we are. I mean, I have to go out into the owlry, and it's quite a fight amongst those birds to have them give me one of the emails from that long ago.
What a trooper
they've
you
gotten
are.
So protective over, you know, the things that we didn't take the first time.
Highly territorial.
Before we do get to those digital owls, we want to kick off today's episode with a mini discussion about additional Harry Potter fan film ideas. This is piggybacking off of last week's episode, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, as you said, we had a lot of fun with last week's episode, and at the end, we came up with our own that we would like to create, so I figured let's put the question over on Patreon and see what our patrons came up with.
And first of all, I do have a little update. Last week, I promised that I would reach out to the creators of Life After Fred to get answers about that ear that was stitched onto his head.
Oh, my God. You didn't. You weren't like, hey, excuse me, I run a podcast.
I didn't identify myself as a podcaster.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I'm just somebody who found the video on YouTube. That's all.
Okay.
And, well, unfortunately, they haven't written back to me. But I tried.
If I got that email in my inbox like 7 or 8 years after making that video, I'd be like, excuse me.
I know.
Did George cut off his brother's ear after he died and then stitch it on himself?
I prefaced the question. I said, I have a quick, grim question for you. I don't even think they've seen the message. I'm not sure this studio is active anymore, unfortunately.
You might have benefited from saying that you run a podcast, because otherwise they might just think you're some weirdo who likes these types of things and is writing into him about
what does it say about all the listeners who like this type of thing and then don't have their own podcast?
Yeah, like Laura too. I mean, I still stand by what I said on last week's episode, by the way. No regrets.
The difference is I also have my own podcast, so.
I think Life After Fred was great.
It was because of that dark twist that nobody saw coming. All right, so back to our listeners. Julianne suggested Molly and Arthur's love story and their eventual involvement with the Order of the Phoenix. I'd love to see where their story begins to overlap with the rest of the Order. Mm. Definitely. That's a great wizarding family. I think one thing we love so much about their house is it's so magical. So let's see their earlier life, which I'm sure was equally magical.
So they're in a different generation than, you know, Snape, Lily, James, the Marauders. They were at school slightly before. There was a different groundskeeper. There was different... You know, like, we don't really know anything else about that era necessarily. It'd be really interesting to see Hogwarts during that time.
Yeah.
And this next one is from Sean McKee, who says, how Regulus Black discovered the existence of the Locket Horcrux, and more importantly, why he tried to retrieve and destroy it. This is a really, really, really good point mm-hmm. for me. Regulus, you know, we know really discovered the Dark Lord's deepest secret, and we don't know exactly where he broke with his own family. It's hinted at, it's guessed at, but even Sirius Black didn't really seem to know what Regulus was capable of. And so that would be really ripe, fertile ground to tell a story for a fan creator to tell a story of.
It reminds me what we were talking about a bit last week when we were looking at that fan-made film on the three Black sisters, and we alluded to the fact that it didn't seem very clear that the Black family was interested in joining forces with Voldemort, at least initially. So it's not always that clear-cut and straightforward, and certainly something changed Regulus's mind about the Dark Lord. And learning what that was would, I think, be be a really interesting story.
Definitely.
All right. This next one comes from Justin. Justin says, since JKR seems like she wants to forget about Ilvermorny because of the backlash, I'd like to see something at the American school that kind of ignores all the parts no one wants to talk about and maybe comes up with some Star Wars Legends level of non-canon canon that is more fun to talk about. 100% agree. This is why I'm so passionate about other creators getting to be active in this space, even if it is like indie fan creators, because that's one of the ways that we're going to keep the fandom alive, right? Is if we keep building on this world, and if you let other creators into the space, it just allows it to become a more interesting and more inclusive space too.
Yeah, and I mean, we kind of got screwed over on Ilvermorny. There was so much hype around it, and we thought it would play a bigger role in the second Fantastic Beasts movie, and it just went nowhere, and now it really doesn't seem like it's going to appear in the next three Fantastic Beasts movies either. So, yeah, it's time for the fans to take this one over, I think. And we need to make our own quiz, because they took the quiz down on
Yeah, they even got rid of the house sorting quiz. Oh, man.
The next fan-made film suggestion comes from Ben, who says, I'd like to see a fan adaptation of the mobile game Hogwarts Mystery. The game had a moderately intriguing story and some recognizable characters that I'd like to see realized without needing to wait to gather energy. Pat can relate to this, right, Andrew?
Pat would be into this. Yeah, I originally rolled my eyes at this because I didn't get it. But then I was thinking about how many people probably play this game and feel very passionate about it. So yeah, I think this is a great idea now.
I would still wait. Hopefully now that the story has concluded, I'm gathering from Ben with this comment, that maybe now they'll finally let me buy like just unlimited energy for X amount of time and I can spend a weekend just going through that game. Because I'm interested. We used to see posts all the time from patrons in our group, like screenshots going, oh, you know, look who showed up. And it was like really interesting, you know, towards what Ben is saying here. Canon characters showing up that you wouldn't expect in interesting ways and being woven into the story. I'm all for it. I just can't deal with the waiting for energy thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, I know Pat's still playing it daily, so I don't think the story is complete yet. Oh. He's only playing it to complete the story, and my gosh, there's a lot of tapping and waiting. I mean, that's all you're doing in that game, is you're just tapping through. It doesn't take any skill. It's just really silly, in my opinion.
Yeah. I gave up pretty early on with that game because I was trapped by the Devil's Snare, and I ran out of energy while I was trapped by the Devil's Snare. So it was like, you gotta wait. That could be, you could almost make this like a fan comedy type scenario where the character's like mid battle and then it's like, oh crap, I gotta wait for freaking energy.
Right.
Oh my God.
Error, time to buy some points.
That would be really funny. Just hold still, Laura.
I miss when we were all obsessed with Wizards Unite. I wish we would all get back into that at once, like the whole fandom and Pokemon Go for that matter. Anyway, this next one is from Chelsea. I feel like a McGonagall Chronicles would be really cool. She has led a really extraordinary life. I think it would translate well into a miniseries. For some reason, I have Pride and Prejudice vibes in my head, but more kick-ass. Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I love the name McGonagall Chronicles. I think you've titled the story.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think McGonagall has one of the most interesting backstories in the Harry Potter series. I've said this before. Rowling's writing on her on PotterNoMore.com was so interesting. I was just fascinated by that. I enjoy reading it again and again. So I would love to see her backstory and her handling Hogwarts as headmistress.
This next one comes from Evelinda, who says, both film series are set in a particular time period in the past. I think it would be really interesting to dive into the Wizarding World in 2021. We would get a glimpse of what life is like at Hogwarts or perhaps Ilvermorny in the modern world. For instance, what new technologies have impacted the Wizarding World? What's it like being a Gen Z or millennial wizard? How has politics or social issues in the Muggle world impacted the Wizarding World? I would imagine it would be an edgy teen show, kind of like Euphoria meets the Magicians. Imagine seeing a character like Rue or Jules from Euphoria as a wizard.
Oh, I love Euphoria.
I love this idea. Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, this is such a great idea. It would stand to reason that eventually technology would start having an impact on the wizarding world, right?
Right.
Like, I just can't imagine, especially muggle-born children. Can you imagine their parents being like, yeah, go to wizard school and don't take your phone?
Feel like a punishment.
There's no way.
The kids would be like, no, I'd rather be a muggle. This reminds me, there are a couple of Twitter accounts that tweet plot lines for shows that ran in the 90s. If the shows were still running in present day, like Seinfeld 2000, I think is one of them or something like that. And, you know, Jerry gets on Twitter and gets canceled, stuff like that. Somebody should have a Harry Potter 2021 Twitter account tweeting what would be happening if the books were set in present day.
That's one of the things that that fan film that we watched last week did, the Lily Potter and the 11th Hour from Apple Juice Productions, where they, you know, they started off by saying Lily's brought a camera to Hogwarts, and it's a static camera. Right. It's not like it moves around, and that's the whole thing. But it reminds me that this whole no technology works at Hogwarts thing was really sort of a maybe not totally forward thinking decision on the author's part, and that there are ways to creatively you know, introduce things like cameras or video cameras into Hogwarts without it being some kind of gimmick. Now, I don't think My Chemical Romance would do a concert at Hogwarts, but I think that certain technology, certain elements of the modern era would be able to, you know, exist and still be canon compliant or not just not weird.
I 100% think that My Chemical Romance would do a concert at Hogwarts.
I mean, I can see Nocturne Alley, but, you know, Hogwarts?
Yeah, really? Hogwarts.
Would they cover Can You Dance Like a Hippogriff?
I hope not.
Okay.
All right, this next one comes from Alyssa. Alyssa says, I've always wanted to see more about Helena Ravenclaw. She strikes me as such an interesting character who we only scratch the surface of, but I still crave more answers regarding her life and her character. I'm interested in her story when she was alive, but less because of her relationship with the Baron and more because of her relationship with her mother. I'm also interested in knowing about her life postmortem and navigating what it means to be a ghost. Maybe more of her interactions with Voldemort when he was still just a handsome Tom Riddle. In general, a Founders-esque story would be awesome, but I'm invested in Helena and Rowena's relationship and the hashtag mommy issues and then the subsequent trauma of being murdered and remaining a ghost where you and your murderer haunt the same castle. I hope she has some semblance of peace. Crying emoji.
Wow.
I like this idea a lot. And really, I would love to see a story about all the Founders. You know, that fan film we discussed last week with the descendants of the Founders really piqued my interest in a story on the Founders or the descendants.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, it would definitely be an interesting character study to examine what it's like for Helena to be in the same space as her murderer.
Yeah.
Like, that's some trauma. It's like kind of like if anybody's watching the Marvel shows that are coming out on Disney Plus, it's like it's basically diving into like consequences and like PTSD for all the things that have happened up until this point. And it would be really interesting to see that kind of thing unpacked in this story.
Thanks to everyone who participated in that question over at patreon.com/mugglecast. And now it's time for voicemails from listeners. We always love hearing from you. So let's get started with this one from Chanel, and it concerns Ron's wand.
Hi, Mugglecasters. It's Chanel. And I just listened to the Ron episode, and he and I share the same birthday. But I wanted to talk about Ron's wand. So my headcanon is that Ron inherited his brother Charlie's wand, but Charlie and Bill inherited those wands from Molly's brothers who passed in the war. That's my headcanon. I'm not sure if it works out as far as birth dates, but since Charlie needed to work with dragons, he needed a special wand, and so he passed his wand along to Ron, but since maybe Molly doesn't talk about her brothers much, Ron doesn't know that that wand came from one of her brothers. So he doesn't think of it as much. So tell me what you think and have a good one.
Well, first of all, happy birthday, Chanel.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Next March, we'll do a character discussion on you instead of Ron. But yeah, I like this idea.
I like it too. I kind of tend to think, like, why not? The Weasleys, you know, have shown throughout seven books that they do pass a lot of stuff down. So I don't see why this would be out of the realm of possibility.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, if you can have a hand-me-down pet, you can certainly have a wand being handed down multiple generations. I always thought that there was more of a tie between Molly's brothers just because of their names being Gideon and Fabian with Fred and George. But yeah, there's certainly no wand tie there. We always seem to know that Fred and George had their own wands. But yeah, I mean, it explains a lot. And we talked about a couple episodes ago, too, how it's not really fair to Ron that he's getting this kind of hand-me-down wand because he can't really come into his own unless he has his own wand. We see sort of that stunted growth from a magical standpoint, not just with him, but with Neville as well.
Yeah. Speaking of Weasley wands, we have this voicemail from Joe about Charlie's wand.
Hey, MuggleCast. This is Joe calling from Colorado. I had a thought after your most recent discussion about Ron and the Weasley family, and you talked about Ron having Charlie's old wand and wondering maybe he had to get a new one when he started his career. Because he works with dragons, I wonder if the fact that some wands have a dragon heartstring core has something to do with it. Either is that not a good wand to have when you're working with dragons because you don't want to be using their heartstring against them, or is it something it's better to work with dragons when you have the dragon heartstring in your wand? Would love to hear your thoughts. Love your show. Thanks.
Love this.
I do too. I think a dragon could sense if the wand has a dragon heartstring within it and thus would not be pleased by that, right? They wouldn't like that.
I know. I'm just imagining them being like, what's in that wand?
How dare you?
Toasty. Toasty time.
Right. Also, Joe from Colorado, you have great audio quality. I just wanted to point that out.
I think he used the voice memo app on his phone. That's why we prefer voice memos. They sound really good.
Yep.
Final voicemail today from Venetia.
Hey, MuggleCast. My name is Venetia, and just wanted to reference your last episode, Hogwarts being a security nightmare, and a comment that Laura made about how boarding schools might be the same nowadays. And I have to agree. I myself went to boarding school in England, and looking back, I look and think it was such a security nightmare, and most especially the responsibility that the school shouldered on these young students who were none the wiser at the time, and the sort of free will that they let us have. Referencing Percy, we see him as this ubiquitous character in the books, very tight-lipped and frustrating. However, Rowling got him spot on. She characterised him in such a way that was realistically so correct to what we have nowadays in schools, and certainly what I experienced when I was at school. So great observation, and thank you so much. I've been listening to the podcast for about a year, and it's wonderful. Thank you so, so much. I know you'll probably have a giggle at my accent. It's not a problem. I love all of your accents as well. I love listening in. So thank you so much. Bye.
It is not every day you get complimented on your accent, like as an American.
Yeah.
Right. No.
And we would not giggle at your accent. You have an authentic accent.
You have a beautiful accent.
Yeah.
And thank you, because American accents are just they're not novel.
No.
Because I feel like just our media, like we're not special. So I really appreciate you saying that, but I think your accent's way cooler.
Yeah.
And thank you for confirming that. It's good to hear that Percy's crappy personality didn't exist in a vacuum.
What I loved about her voicemail was that she basically is like speaking very softly and saying,
I know,
I'm going to tell you about how my boarding school was a security nightmare. I don't want to get caught, but I'm going to talk really softly.
Yeah, right. I had the same thought.
So Venetia went to Hogwarts, right? Is that the whole thing? That's what I got out of
She didn't want McGonagall or Dumbledore to hear.
But yeah, it's an interesting balance of between free will and rule following, I guess, like this, because when you're at a boarding school, you live there, you're there all the time. It is your home. What rights does that give you versus if it was just like a day school you're going to, you know, it can, I think they could afford to be a bit more restrictive because you can just leave, you know?
Right. It takes a lot away. It's kind of like living in a college dorm in that, you know, there are certain rules you have to abide by in your dorm, or you break them, but just don't get caught.
You get in trouble like I did for drinking.
Really? Did you?
I did. I was of age, but I still got in trouble because other people who live with me were not of age. Quick story. The resident advisor came to the door, knocked on the door, and claimed that they heard the ping pong balls from beer pong through the door. Now, are you kidding me? Like, how is that possible?
It's a very high pitch. Yeah, higher pitches go further. It's like a shrill. You can hear that. I hear people playing beer pong.
Sometimes those front doors aren't very sealed. You know, I'm thinking like a hotel room.
Maybe. I think somebody just called it in.
Probably.
Eric, did you just say that you hear people playing beer pong?
Oh yeah, from blocks sometimes? Away. Yeah, the ping pongs. You can really hear them.
Wow.
You have great hearing then.
My friends used to be an RA, and he would take great pleasure in busting kids for drinking alcohol and then pouring the alcohol down the drain in front of them.
No. Oh, that's so rude.
That would probably be me.
At one point, one of my roommates was an RA, and she was cool as hell. She didn't bust anybody.
Shout out to all the cool RAs.
Yeah.
So moving on to written Muggle mail, we have this comment from Miss Ava Malfoy. She says, good morning, evening, night, or afternoon, Mugglecasters. I was listening to your latest episode on security nightmares. I was listening to the troll in the dungeon part when you were talking about the prefects being too trusted. The Slytherin common room is in the dungeons. So what happens when the Slytherin prefects run into the troll in the dungeon? I'm coming up on my 1 year anniversary on listening. I instantly fell in love with the Thestrals episode. Love you all. Stay safe.
Is that the one where we observed that Hermione really wants to see Thestrals? And we were like, wow, that's dark, girl.
Andrew was like, she really wants to kill people.
That must have been it. Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You know, troll in the dungeon and they're like, hey, everyone, go to your common room. Good luck, Slytherin.
They're setting them up. Oh, man. Just another security nightmare to add to the ever-growing list.
That makes me think, what happens when the Slytherins get sent to the dungeons at the end of, you know, during the battle? Like, wouldn't they be able to get out? Like, know their way out if they're familiar with those areas?
Well, here's another email about our security nightmare discussion. This concerns Hagrid. This is from Debbie T. I just listened to episode 502, All the Ways Hogwarts is a Security Nightmare. When you all discussed how Hagrid could be a security nightmare, while I agreed with that perspective, it also rubbed me the wrong way. Because Hagrid calls out to the animal lover in me, and I could see myself hanging around Hagrid, just like the trio, because he is such a caring guy, and because he loves animals so much. I realize that maybe the answer isn't necessarily not allowing Hagrid to teach, but rather having him only teach the advanced classes in the later years. That way, Professor Grubbly Plank could teach the younger students and prepare them for advanced classes, and Hagrid could have time to attend to gamekeeping duties as well. Just wanted to share this thought. Love hearing your perspectives and all the unique topics that you discuss.
I agree. I know I tend to give Hagrid a really hard time, but I think maybe he would just be better served not even teaching the more advanced classes, but maybe just being a teacher's assistant.
Ooh, ouch. It's a bit of a demotion.
You mean somebody that the teacher can have the structure and the responsibility at the end of the day, but Hagrid can be like, if they give Hagrid the floor, you know, to say something interesting.
Because there does seem like maybe in certain cases, he has the trust of these creatures. He knows how to handle them. So maybe if you have somebody like a Grubbly Plank who can teach about them, and then Hagrid can do a little bit more of the practical side of things. You know, like you would have a lab session in addition to your bio or your chemistry class. That's kind of along the lines of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it would definitely be a different relationship than what I think the American schooling system would be. Like, if we had a teacher's assistant, the teacher was not really even interacting with them. Like, they were handing out homework or handing out the papers for the quiz or something. This would be more of a, you know, trade-off kind of teaching style, but Hagrid, the benefit would be that Hagrid would not have to be in charge of the actual lesson planning.
Yeah. You know, I've also had the experience of having two professors who are sort of like equally leveled, but just have different backgrounds. Like I took an interdisciplinary studies course one time that had two professors from different departments. And I wonder if Hagrid and Grubbly Plank could exist in kind of a symbiotic way where Grubbly Plank is like, again, sort of there is like, for base level understanding for the students. And then Hagrid is there to introduce, to the point that was raised earlier, the more practical elements of the study.
Yeah. They tried that a little bit with Trelawney and Ferenz, right?
Yeah. But Trelawney's really racist. So.
Yeah, she was too racist to ever get in the same room. But she's like, the horse.
I shouldn't laugh.
The horse is just.
Yeah.
All right. This next one comes from Casey. Casey's writing in about the Flu Network and the Basilisk. Casey says, in response to the security issues at Hogwarts and the Flu Network in particular, I am wondering why the trio didn't take advantage of this in the Chamber of Secrets when they were trying to get information from Draco. Using this instead of the Polyjuice potion could have saved the Hermione cat debacle and the potential of being caught making the brew. I also wonder why the wafting smell didn't have people wondering what was going on in Myrtle's bathroom. I remember Hermione sweating at some point while stirring over the pot, giving the impression of steam. Which brings up the question, are these smells so prevalent that everyone finds it normal? Also, after your comments about the basilisk and Myrtle stating that she saw two eyes looking at her, it has me wondering about something else. If the chamber was open and the basilisk was in the girl's bathroom when Myrtle was in there, at what point did it open? If she was able to go in and make it into a stall and saw the eyes on her way out of said stall, one could assume it was opened after she went in. If this is the case, I wonder who followed her into the bathroom to open the chamber. Was it Tom Riddle? If so, would he not realize this could lead to potentially the school being shut down and him being sent back to the orphanage? But if it was open before she went in and she was just not observant of this gaping hole where the sinks used to be, well, clearly she was more distraught than we could imagine walking past a basilisk of that size. Or maybe she just needed thicker glasses. Oh, I love this level of like granular observation about the logistics.
Yes.
of how this could have timed out. I almost wonder if maybe the basilisk was on its way back, you know, like it had been out, you know, like cruising the pipes and it was like, OK, time to go to bed. And it just happened to be returning to the bathroom while Myrtle was in there.
I'm
time to go to bed. It's bedtime.
Good night. Farewell.
Yeah.
I think this is answered, honestly, in Myrtle's story. She's in the stall. Tom Riddle comes in, or she hears a boy speaking, and she's like, she gets out of the stall to tell the boy that this is a girl's bathroom.
That's
can't
right.
Be in here. So he's opening the chamber and basically summoning the monster, and she can't really figure it out, like what he's doing, because she doesn't speak Parseltongue. So she comes out to scold him, and that's when she gets hit with the eyes. So he was about to call it out. And then the interesting thing, though, is that once he had been discovered for the exact reason that Casey sort of wonders here, what exactly, like, wouldn't that give the location of the entrance away? I wonder how or under what circumstances Tom maybe manipulated the crime scene to, I don't know, somehow explain a girl dying in the exact place where it happened, but without casting suspicion on the chamber.
Yeah. And then as far as the first question here, I just don't think the trio, especially Harry, is that practiced in his second year to be able to use the Flu Network effectively. We see it happen at the beginning of the book, right? When he wants to go to Diagon Alley and he ends up in Nocturne Alley.
Diagon
Alley! Yeah. So I would also think there's probably some sort of enchantments placed upon the fireplaces within Hogwarts so that you can't just pop in and out of other parts of the castle.
Well, you say that.
I know.
But the school is a security nightmare, so who really knows?
You're right.
It was a fun email, though.
Yeah, no, lot of detail. A lot of detail there.
Yeah, and in terms of, like, Hermione Cat, some plot lines have to exist so we can have great moments like Hermione Cat. Don't you want Hermione Cat? I don't think any of us regret seeing Hermione Cat.
Yeah. Also, it's a bathroom. I mean, other smells come out of there besides Polyjuice Potion.
Yeah.
That might be a little bit. I was afraid we were going to go there.
Well, also,
a little
bit
more overpowering.
Yeah. We're coming from a culture that at one time used to just soil themselves, like, in public. So, yeah, I don't know that this would be a big deal.
Used to. I mean, I still, but anyway, next email.
Wow. All right. Well, Andrew, you'll be happy to know we have one more security nightmare email.
Great.
Also about the Chamber of Secrets, and it comes from Courtney, who says, "Hey, MuggleCast, I was just listening to your latest episode about Hogwarts being a security nightmare, and I had a few thoughts about the Basilisk and the Chamber of Secrets. You were talking about Aragog being blamed for Myrtle's death and how no one was able to figure out it wasn't his fault. Where was Newt Scamander? He should have been around somewhere, or at least in contact with Dumbledore when this was all going on. He would have known immediately that it couldn't have been an acromantula petrifying people. He would have been shouting to the rooftops, excuse me, you have a basilisk on the loose here? Let me know what you think. Love the show, Courtney."
This is a great point, especially because in the Fantastic Beasts film series, we are being led to believe that Dumbledore and Newt had a very close relationship. So I suppose it's possible this friendship is going to break down in the later films, and maybe that could explain why Dumbledore wouldn't consult Newt. Or maybe he did consult Newt, and we just, you know, it happened behind the scenes, and we didn't know it.
Yeah. I mean, also, Dumbledore wasn't headmaster at this point in time, so his ability to have influence over the decision-making in this case might have been limited. So I could even see him believing Newt and believing Hagrid and sort of being like, "Hey, Hagrid, like, low key, you can hang around here as an adult. I got your back." You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because he knows there's nothing else he can do because he doesn't have proof.
Yeah. And I think the other piece of it, too, is that it's never made clear what exactly Hagrid had in terms of a pet, right? If we use the Chamber of Secrets movie is what I'm thinking about during that flashback. It's Tom who confronts Hagrid, and then Aragog goes scurrying off into the forest, never to be seen again. It presumptively could have been a basilisk that was Hagrid's pet. It was just there was no proof of what exactly it was that he had, right? So it was just Tom's word against Hagrid's, and Tom won out. And I think, as with anything like this, the school was probably looking to sweep it under the rug and to move on as quickly as possible. And as Laura pointed out, Dumbledore was not headmaster. It was Dippet at the time, appropriate name for this situation. But anyway, yeah, I just think that they didn't want to investigate. That's probably the biggest piece here.
Yeah, Hagrid was a convenient scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, continuing on Muggle Mail, we have one from Megan. Who says, "Hey, MuggleCast, I started listening to you guys several months ago after your podcast was recommended in And That's Why We Drink. And I have to say, you are the HP pod. I love Em and Christine so much, and it's nice to hear that they're still talking. I mean, they're always going to be talking Potter, but it's nice to hear that they recommend, you know, the experts once in a while. Anyway, I have to say, you are the HP podcast I didn't know I needed."
Well, thank you, Megan. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm in one of the December 2019 episodes right now, going between new episodes and old, kind of jumping around, LOL. And you were talking about an 8-year-old who loves the books, so I wanted to write in about my daughter. I've been reading the books with my almost 9-year-old since she was 6, and we just finished Half-Blood Prince. She's homeschooled, and we're doing a curriculum in Walduck Way called Wizards and Wands. And she's as obsessed as I am. It might be my proudest mom moment. We also have the rule that she can't watch the movie until she finishes the book. And so we make a little event out of it for each movie. We try to do themed foods and or drinks and make a night of it. It's something I hope she always has fond memories of as she grows up. She's also super excited to be making our second family trip up to Universal Orlando for her birthday later this month. Anyway, I just wanted to share with you all, thanks for the years of HP content and keeping me entertained while cleaning the house and running errands. Thank you, Megan.
That's great.
This is so beautiful. Like, I can just imagine, because I grew up reading the books too. I started reading them when I was like 11. And I just remember, I have such fond memories, so much nostalgia for the magic of what it felt like to dive into these stories. And you're really amplifying it by making these into events. Like, you're having little mini movie premieres at home. I think that's so cool.
Parenting done right.
Yep.
Yes. And I think she will remember these memories. So
I think so.
Good
too.
For you for creating these for her.
So I'll return the shout out to And That's Why We Drink podcasts. It's paranormal and true crime.
Perfect.
Well, I
for
know which
like
podcast.
Laura.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm downloading it right after we finish recording.
Before we continue with this Muggle Mail episode, I want to suggest you start writing in to a therapist. If you think there's something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals, check out BetterHelp. They will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist who you can work with digitally. What's great about BetterHelp is that it makes it so easy to jump into therapy. Within 48 hours from now, you can start speaking with a therapist right from wherever you're listening to MuggleCast, and the service is available for clients worldwide. Just log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to take a time-consuming trip to a therapist's office. If you decide to set up a real-time appointment via text messages, listen to this. I've been using their live text chat feature, and this lets you and your therapist see what each other is typing in real time. There's no waiting for one of you to hit the send button or vice versa. No waiting for the other person to read and then digest the message. This might sound a bit odd and unique, but it actually helps speed up the conversation. So even if you decide to do a live text chat, you'll be able to have a conversation that is as speedy as a live face-to-face chat. I thought that was really clever. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So do something good for yourself by working with a mental health professional. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and we have a special offer for you. MuggleCast listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/mugglecast. Again, that's betterhelp.com/mugglecast for 10% off your first month. Okay, our next email concerns the Fantastic Beasts 3 opening. This was a discussion we had on the show a few weeks ago. This is a suggestion from Brazil. This is from Denise. I have two ideas of how the third movie of the new franchise can start. As a Brazilian, I'm really excited about the fact that Rio will be part of Fantastic Beasts, even though I don't live there. First option, I believe that they could start showing Tiqua Forest. Suddenly, a new beast would appear and invade the urban part of the city, causing mayhem. Newt would be attracted to the place in order to find it. While in Rio, he could meet a professor from Castel Obruxo. I found the pronunciation on wizardingworld.com, so
that.
I know that's right.
Yes.
Who would help him to capture the beast. My second option would start with Newt and Dumbledore having a conversation about how the blood pact could be broken. While planning everything, Newt could come up with a solution that would bring everyone to Brazil. Thank you for your work, guys. I love the podcast. Thank you,
Great
Denise.
Great idea.
Okay, some good ideas. I'm a little concerned. I'm not so sure anymore if we're going to Brazil in the third Fantastic Beasts movie. Based on the, we've heard there have been rewrites and whatnot, so don't hold your breath. That's all I'm saying.
But
I don't have inside info.
It was
or anything,
a Twitter but... header. It was the header image over on.
Yeah, but so site. Much has happened since then. I don't know if we can believe anything that we've heard about Fantastic Beasts 3.
I only believe in what Twitter headers were where on what profile picture. That's all I believe in these days.
That is definitely.
I don't have that. Then up is down. Left is right.
Yeah. Made me think of like a Jurassic Park type of scene where like the brush is rustling and then all of a sudden a beast just bounds out of it and starts running through the city of Rio.
Honestly, can we just have a Jurassic Park version of Fantastic Beasts?
Yeah.
Like number three is like they're opening a theme park in Brazil and all hell breaks loose and it's scary and dangerous and then Newt has to save the day and then Dumbledore comes and helps and Queenie's like, oh, everybody's so good. I'm going to be on the good side again.
That would be like a...
And then everybody just forgets about Grindelwald.
That would be like a pretty predictable, like, colonial thing to do. Be like, let's build this dangerous theme park, but not in our country. Like, let's go build it somewhere else.
Let's put it somewhere else. Well, I'm not saying like Newt builds it himself. No, I'm saying the people of Brazil decide to build it or something. Mm. I don't know.
No, I could see the British Wizarding Society being like, let's build this in Brazil. Let's make it their problem. Okay, this next email comes from Mitchell, age 10, and he's writing with a character perspective about Grip Hook. Mitchell says, hi, MuggleCast. I was listening to your recent episode on the story from different perspectives of other characters in the books, and surprisingly enough, I'm making a book on Grip Hook in book 7. I got the idea from when I got the Lego figure of him. Love the podcast. Mitchell, this is such a great idea.
Good idea, Mitchell.
Yeah.
And I see you're only 10 years old. You're doing way more than I did at 10 years old. So
same.
Respect.
Mm-hmm.
Keep us posted on your book. Keep us posted on your progress.
Damn, if you can be, sorry, darn, if you can be inspired by a Lego figure, I think you'll be inspired by many things in life. So good for you.
Yeah, great job, Mitchell. Our next email comes from L, who talks about the one true pairing of Harry and Tom Riddle. I'm just listening to your 500th podcast. Congrats. I'm currently listening to the part where you touch on Harry Potter ships. I was just on Archive of Our Own a few days ago and stumbled upon Tom Riddle and Harry Potter ships. I'm so confused by this, but it is intriguing. I just wanted to know if you had ever seen or heard of this and your thoughts on it. I love Wolfstar, one of my favorite ships in the universe, along with Linny. Ginny and Harry never seemed to really make sense to me. Harry was only paired with Ginny because it was his best friend's sister.
Yes.
Boo. That's wrong.
Wow. This email is going to
offend
generate
everybody.
A lot of discussion, I have a feeling. I just want to say thank you for everything you do. When I moved across country in 2016, your podcast is what got me through moving to a new school and everything. I even dragged my mom to our local Barnes & Noble for the midnight release party of Cursed Child because I had no friends. You and Harry Potter have been such a huge part of my life. Thank you so much. Well, we're your friends,
so
Al.
So sweet.
Yeah. Maybe you would have more friends if you had more positive opinion on Harry and Ginny. Just
no.
Saying.
No.
I'm kidding, Al. I would love to be your friend.
Well, first of all, the reason why I can't even entertain the idea of Tom Riddle and Harry Potter is that they're completely different ages. Like, it just wouldn't work. I mean, do fan fiction writers pair up people who wouldn't align age-wise?
They're at least 50 years apart, right?
Right.
Like, I mean,
is this common, Laura, where they...
Yeah.
You know,
well, and people play really? With time, too.
Yeah.
So that could be part of it. Like, Harry, you know, like, is using Hermione's time turner and something goes amiss and all of a sudden he's back at, like, 1930s Hogwarts and he sees this, you know, tall, dark, and handsome, very mysterious man, like, walking down the halls and he's just smitten. Ooh. But yeah, no, I could definitely see it being written that way. And also, like, you know, age is just a number.
For me, it's the ultimate betrayal to kill someone's parents and then them. I could never support a relationship that ends that way.
But what if Harry travels back in time and gets to Tom Riddle, you know, pre-parent murdering and
changes
him.
Makes him a changed man.
All right. I'd maybe read that. I don't know if I would ever accept it.
He's like, no, I'm
No, but we talk so much trash on time turners and how dangerous they are. I don't know if we can sit here and be like, that's a great idea. It goes against what we say here. So
no, but I think to Laura's point, though, and obviously she's read a lot of fan fiction having moderated for so many years. And I defer to you as the expert here, but I think it isn't uncommon, right, to see these types of pairings. Like, we have a tendency when we pair characters up, like we did in that episode, to stick pretty much to who are the most popular characters. And then, as you were saying earlier, like, they fall pretty much in line age-wise, but I'm sure there's some pretty wild one true pairings out there.
Oh yeah. No, like Ron and McGonagall is a thing that I have seen.
All right.
So age is not like age and character motivation. Like these are not things that prevent ships from becoming popular.
I'm imagining McGonagall walking up to Ron one day, just being like, "I saw the map. Why were you in bed with Peter?"
Oh my God.
Why'd you cheat on me?
Jilted lover. I was just thinking that when McGonagall said to Ron she'd turn him into a pocket watch, he was like really turned on at the time and then followed up in her quarters later.
Look, my shallow answer to this is like, if I just saw Harry and Tom Riddle together, like that's an attractive couple. I support that. That's but true. To go any deeper, I'm not into it.
So like if you got a Dan Radcliffe and Christian Coulson.
Yes.
Yeah, you'd be into that.
100%.
Okay, frankly, those two, I would be into that too. What? They're good looking dudes.
Maybe they can star in a movie together.
What do you make of the Harry was only paired with Ginny because it was his best friend's sister comment?
Yeah, I think it's very clear that the books do not do a good enough job of explaining why else Harry and Ginny would get together. And that's an utter failing that I am still working to fix.
Yeah.
Is that something you would change in the Harry Potter books?
That's something.
Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, think about that, because in a few weeks, we're going to have a discussion on things we would change in the Harry Potter books. Maybe that can be one of yours.
Yeah.
Maybe it's taboo to say this, but I always just saw it kind of along these lines of Harry finally formally becoming a member of the Weasley family. Like
right.
He's been a member for, you know, 7 books, not officially, but now officially because he's married to Ginny, he's part of the family.
Right, because they luckily had a girl and so it could be all heteronormative and nice. But like for too long, women have been seen as property and you marry into a family to get that family's goods and all that crap. So that just icks me. All of that icks me of like Harry, like the only suggesting that he would only marry Ginny so he could like be a Weasley and not in name. But,
no,
you know, it's just,
I mean, it's I think it's more symbolic than that, you know. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm totally down with the, you know, the symbolism behind it and everything like that. I just feel like Ginny's character was not fully fleshed out, and the attempt to do so didn't happen until it was very clear that that was the pairing that was going to happen.
Right.
So yeah, I agree that Ginny needed more love in the books.
Here is some feedback on our fan-made film episode of last week from Bev. I watched 2 of the films you mentioned, having never bothered with fan films until now. The fight scene in Severus Snape and the Marauders was indeed very well done. It works so much better when you have spells firing back and forth so fast, plus the effects and music were good. It highlighted just how much of a bully James was before Lily helped him see sense. Impressive all around. And Dumbledore and Grindelwald for the greater good. What an interesting take. Very interesting. That's all I'm saying. Buying that. Most of all, I think I'm impressed that such an effort has gone into these. Serious time, money, thought, and care made them. If these people don't end up making blockbusters one day, I'll be very surprised. Thank you, Bev. That's, I think, exactly what we were going for with that episode, right, Andrew?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think these deserved more attention. These all deserve more attention. I think, like I said in that episode, it scratches the itch that we all have, especially when we have to wait so long for the next Fantastic Beasts movie and then the one after that and then the one after that. So
yeah.
So yeah, this is giving us what we've wanted for so long. And I'm glad you liked them, Beth.
Yeah, we even talked at some point down the line of doing a part 2 of these fan-made films.
So many.
There are.
And now they're showing up. They're all showing up in my YouTube recommendations.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to watch, but I want to like sit down and really focus
on
these.
Save to watch
so.
Later. It's such a great feature.
All right. Next email from Mira concerns women in Harry Potter. Hi, I hope you are doing well. I can't believe I wrote in about quarantine and Hogwarts so long ago. Anyhow, I had a few thoughts about the last discussion, the achievements of women in Harry Potter. When Micah asked about how Laura and Olivia felt about the portrayal of witches in Harry Potter, I know he wasn't addressing listeners, but I started to think about representation. I think a great thing about the women in Harry Potter is that there are role models for each of the positive traits. Luna and all her quirks really grow on Harry, but also the reader. Even though it is cliched, she shows young girls and all young children that it is okay to be yourself. Hermione, like Olivia mentioned, started out as just being a really smart student, and she was ambitious in education, but she also grows on the reader. Ginny, though she was not portrayed well, sometimes in both the books and the movies, it's not Bonnie Wright's fault, it's David Yates' fault, she says, was a role model for being courageous, and as she puts it, anything is possible if you've got enough nerve. Tonks showed kindness and innocence through her clumsiness. McGonagall showed us more bravery and selflessness, and so on. Thank you for all that you do. I love the show. I feel like it has gotten me through quarantine without going insane, and I'm hoping for another 500! Well, so are we, Mira. Thanks for listening, and glad to hear it helped you during quarantine. All great points, I think.
Yeah.
I like how she focused on each of the leading women in the Harry Potter series.
All right. Well, this is not a leading woman in the Harry Potter series, but this next email is about Mrs. Norris, and it comes from Kate. Kate says...
Yes, she is.
A leading woman.
She's a leading lady in Filch's life.
All right. Kate says, hi, MuggleCast. I've been a listener for a while now and finally decided to write in. Today, I listened to episode 505 and was especially interested in how Mrs. Norris came into Filch's possession. Throughout the series, the characters often mention how Mrs. Norris seemingly communicates with Filch about students out in the halls after curfew or otherwise getting into trouble. She's almost described as having human-like traits. I can't help but connect this to the first book when Uncle Vernon sees Professor McGonagall in her cat form reading a map on Privet Drive. This might be outrageous, but is Mrs. Norris somehow an animagus? The books tell us that the process to become an animagus is very difficult and easily messed up. She could very well be someone stuck in animal form, maybe even like Nagini and the whole Maledictus thing. It would make sense if a squib like Filch would adopt Mrs. Norris as a comrade in the magic but not quite group, kind of like they're united as parts of the wizarding world people tend to purposefully forget. Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks so much.
Oh, this is going to haunt me now.
I mean, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with like the Nagini thing. Like once the Nagini thing was revealed, like once we dove into that possibility, it opens up a whole realm of possibilities for like retconning characters, like being like, hey, this person's actually not an animal.
I'm also thinking about how in Cursed Child, the trolley lady is like this really scary security guard if you break the rules. That's a great scene in the play, and I really enjoyed that. But yeah, you never know, evidently. I won't downplay this theory. I'm into it.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, we do have to remember that Mrs. Norris is often described as having these like lamp-like eyes that feel like they can see through things. And Harry sometimes wonders if she can see through the invisibility cloak. I think that there could be something special about her that we might find out later.
I like it as just a regular old like homage to Cats. It's like Cats are like, but like Cats, the long and storied history of Cats is like a witch's familiar. They commune with the underworld. They're like, they have a sixth sense. Like Cats really do seem sometimes for any cat owners out there, they're nodding. For any dog owners, they're like, what are you talking about? Cats seem to be in touch with, you know, an extra level of reality. And even before we knew that there were Neasles, which are just magic cats, you know, cats themselves have a sort of aura or a mysticism about them. And I think that's what Rowling might have been touching on when giving Filch, who's normally such an outsider, his own familiar to wander the ground of Hogwarts.
I really like that. And I think at some point, I don't know if it was Rowling or who dismissed the idea of Mrs. Norris being a Neasle, because that was a popular theory following the reveal on Crookshanks. The other thing I would just mention is I know in this email it's referred to Mrs. Norris being Filch's cat or him being in possession of her. I've always seen Mrs. Norris kind of as an independent in that sense. Like, if anything, she's in control of him. So
that's she tells him where to go and he goes. Like, imagine if she tells him there are students out of bed at the pet store. He's got to go get litter and food.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see Mrs. Norris as his pet. They're almost like a duo.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I could kind of see Mrs. Norris deciding, like, hey, you're my human, as opposed to Filch being like, you're my cat. You know?
Now right. I'm thinking about all relationships between cat owners and the cat. Like, are they really their pets or is it like a duo?
No. The cat is in control.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Have you ever heard the saying that's like, you know, dog looks at his human and is like, oh, you care for me, you protect me, you feed me, you house me, you must be God. And the cat looks at the human and says, you care for me, you protect me, you house me, you feed me, I must be God.
JY, who's listening live right now on our Patreon, she did back up what you said, Micah, about Rowling at one point saying that Mrs. Norris is just a cat. Nothing more, nothing less. And I believe she said this on her original site. I think in her FAQ section, I vaguely remember that being one of the questions she posted.
Have we talked about Filch possibly courting Madam Pince at all recently?
No. Why?
Because okay, two of this, because that's a ship I would read more fanfic about. Mm. The idea that there's these two staff members at Hogwarts who are really bristly and don't really get along with students, but might find comfort in each other's company.
Yeah
we're having a whole Filch spinoff series here.
I know, he has no
Laura,
problem.
You started it.
Yeah, I know, he could be such an interesting character if given the time. That's all I'll say about that.
Definitely. All right, well, it is time for our throwback question of this Muggle Mail episode, going all the way back to August 25th 2007, so 14 years ago almost. This is from Blake, 13 at the time, now either 26 or 27, depending on birthday. And I guess he or she, because I don't know, from Dallas, Texas, asks about James's love. They say, hey, Mugglecasters, love the show. Anyways, I wanted to ask your opinion on something that's been bugging me throughout the Harry Potter series. It's well known that Lily's love for Harry kept him alive. She sacrificed herself for him. But what about James? He was there that night, he put himself before Voldemort, and he too sacrificed himself for Harry and Lily. Doesn't that count for anything? Maybe a mother's love is stronger than a father's. Thanks for all your time.
J.K. Rowling was speaking as a mother of a newborn at the time. She wanted this story to be about a mother's love. I think she acknowledges, and everybody agrees, Harry's father made a huge sacrifice as well, but this is the story she wanted to tell about Lily protecting Harry, Lily sacrificing herself.
Yeah, I agree. I also think, though, you know, and we've had conversations about if Harry Potter were to be retold and like updated a little bit, or if we were to get spinoff stories that take place in present day, I think there could be an opportunity to really dive into this idea that anybody who's willing to sacrifice themselves for somebody they love can cast this kind of magic. And I think that, you know, you could do this in a way to sort of put to bed the idea that only mothers can have deep connections with their children. Right?
Yeah. Well, to that point too, Laura, we see it at the end of Deathly Hallows when Harry essentially sacrifices himself, the protection that it provides to his side of the battle, right? Things start to really go in their favor after that. So I think you can make the case that not just a mother can make that kind of sacrifice. But I also think we've probably touched on this before, and I know J.K. Rowling has spoken about it as well. Like, Lily had the choice.
Right.
And I think that's what factors in here is James didn't have a choice. James was going to be murdered no matter what, and we're not trying to by any means take away from his sacrifice. You know, he protected his wife and his son, and there should be a lot of credit given there. And I just don't think the story spends a lot of time talking about that, though. And kind of to what you were saying earlier, Laura, like if we were to revisit it in modern day, perhaps it would be told a little bit differently, but I go back to that whole choice aspect for Lily. Like, she made the decision to step in front of that spell when she could have easily just stood to the side.
Yeah. Voldemort was always going to murder James. He was always going to murder Harry, but he gave Lily the option to walk away.
And again, that was a choice by Rowling. She wanted to speak to a mother's love.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say in the books, well, with the exception of maybe what Harry does in Deathly Hallows, like Micah was saying, I think it's safe to say that a mother's love is stronger than a father's love in canon.
Hmm. I guess that was J.K. Rowling's intention. I don't know. I don't want to wade into that debate. I think
that could be a whole episode.
All right. Well, thank you, Blake. We are very sorry it took so long to answer your question. We hope you're doing well. We'll try to do better next time you send us an email. If you have any feedback, whether you're Blake or anybody else, about today's discussion, you can email mugglecast@gmail.com or use the contact form on mugglecast.com. We also have the voicemail line, 1-920-3-MUGGLE. That's 1-920-368-4453. You can also record a voice memo using your phone, which will capture your voice in really high quality. And then you can email that file to mugglecast@gmail.com as well. It's time for Quizzitch.
Last week's question, at what United States college was a Very Potter musical written and first performed? The correct answer to this question is the University of Michigan. Go Blue. And in fact, several people answered University of Michigan. Go Blue. Correct answers were submitted by so many people. It's crazy. Over 50 entries. But those names include Danish Puff Pastry, Bonkers Bricks, Kaylee Elizabeth Mary Della S, Cheryl, Frumpy but Super Smart, Megan, Trace, Rachel, Bananas Rule Hogwarts.
Agreed.
I Love Andrew, Eric, Laura, Micah, Remus Lupin 757, aka Beck, Asuna, Karis, Ali, Stibba, Mariel, Delesh, and Ellen and Irene, and others. Next week's question. What secret does the Grey Lady say Rowena Ravenclaw kept from the other founders? Submit your answer to us over at mugglecast.com/Quizzitch.
And if you could take a moment to do the following, we would really appreciate it, as they all help us continue to run and grow the show. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to MuggleCast. Follow us on social media. Just search for MuggleCast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, even LinkedIn if you want to make Micah happy. And finally, join our community of passionate listeners today at patreon.com/MuggleCast. Listener support lets us spend less time on the boring Muggle things and more time in the magical wizarding world. By pledging, you'll receive instant access to bonus MuggleCast, the ability to listen to us record live each week, early access to each new episode as soon as we finish editing it, our Facebook and Discord groups, which are so much fun to hang out in, and so much more. You can check out all the benefits at patreon.com/MuggleCast, and your support goes to funding various elements of the show, including the production, tools for making social media clips, a tool to get each episode of the pod uploaded to YouTube. We just re-upped our subscription there, our live Quizzitch games, and so much more. Your money goes to all elements of MuggleCast, and it's very, very helpful. So thank you very much.
One of the great new benefits that we're offering this year over on Patreon is a monthly Ask Me Anything with each of the hosts, and I've had a chance to watch the first two so far with you and Eric, and they're really great. I've enjoyed them.
And last but not least, thank you for listening to today's episode. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
And I'm Laura.
Bye.